welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of September 30th / October, the first week. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday morning is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm just feeling like there's a little bit of rugby in my head.
Well, look for a contusion somewhere on your forehead. Maybe somebody hit you, smacked with a ball while you were asleep.
I don't think it would be a rugby ball if I had contusions or anything like that. So,
check for the rugby ball, you know, with some of your DNA on it.
Yeah, probably in that situation, it wouldn't take CSI very long to find it. Right, we've got the Rugby World Cup going on right now, and Japan beat Ireland on Saturday night, so that was a big deal. So, yeah, a lot of interest in what's going on in this sport now.
I got home last night, and the first thing the wife said was, like, what a game that was. I'm going, like, okay, when did this happen?
Yes, and also there's a lot of, oh, that looks cool. Oh, what just happened? What are the rules? Oh, wait a minute, we won. Oh, this is great. This is great.
Rugby's interesting because the fan response is really interesting. There's a culture of, I guess, not the kind of base, you know, my guys are the only thing that matters kind of fandom in rugby. There's a lot of, wow, you guys played a really good game, kind of respect for the opponents.
All right. Well, anyway, let's get to baseball. And on this week's show, we've got Neftali Soto of DeNA. We're going to look at the back-to-back PL winning Lions. We're going to take a look at the playoff matchups and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I went out to Yokohama Stadium yesterday and I caught up with Neftali Soto, the second-year Bay Stars infielder / outfielder, with whom we spoke to open up the regular season at the end of March. I went out, I think that was show 6 of this year, and I went out to Yokohama Stadium and talked to him basically in the tunnel, just where Alex Ramirez does his post-game interviews for TV, and we spoke there. In March, and he sat on a table there again on Saturday, and you'll hear people shuffling by and some people coughing or blowing their noses, or there's all kinds of distractions in there. But anyway, Neftali has played some second. He's played some outfield mostly for the Bay Stars, and I got into a Twitter discussion with a fan on Saturday, actually, who wanted to talk about bombs and offense and all this stuff and say that Soto was snubbed for the All-Star game. But you and I know baseball is a two-way game. I mean, it's not just about what you can do with the bat, and we all know Neftali's best position is the right-handed batter's box. So I don't know. I mean, he has hit 43 home runs this year. He was the home run king last year with 41. It looks like he's going to win it again this season, so that's awesome. He also leads in RBI, so he's got a double crown going, and he himself talked about the fact that he'd like to see his batting average a little bit higher. It was higher last year, over 300. It's around 270 this year, but we'll see how productive he can be next year. But I think the biggest thing is that this team needs for him to be productive in the playoffs, in the CLCS, in both rounds, so it can get out of there. But he's a terrific player, and you know, I really like his approach. And if Yoshitomo Tsutsugo does leave for the majors in the offseason, they can put Soto in left field and probably not have to worry about that spot for the season, unless they want to rest him or in case he does get injured. But I think that's a really good spot for him. I did joke that we are expecting a triple crown effort from him next year. And you know, he said he wasn't satisfied with his batting average, but he said a lot of things. So let's take a listen to Neftali Soto. All right, we are joined by Neftali Soto of the Bay Stars. Thank you very much for taking some time with us.
Thank you.
All right, so how are you feeling physically now? It's been a long season.
I'm good, a little tired, but I guess it's normal. But I'm good. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling healthy. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Well, wait till you actually get old, then you'll know what tired is. All right. So. Now, you guys are playing the Tigers here in this series. If they win all three, then maybe you'll face them in the first round of the Climax Series, but what's the approach when you go into games like these?
I try to take them like a normal, regular game. If they win all three, they would probably face the same guys. So trying to stay healthy and trying to work my thing and get my timing right, because now we got a week off. So just get prepared, you know? Same ball, same game. So I'm just trying to do my thing.
All right, now it looks like you guys are going to either face the Tigers or the Carp. Either way, what's your attitude as you go into the CLCS?
I mean, we got to do our thing. They're both great teams. They can hit, they can pitch, so we got to do our thing. We got to work hard and be aggressive, I think.
Now, you told me when we had a sit down right here, actually, in March, you said, you know, you had a good second half of the last season, but you really have to focus, keep your head down. And you did that. You've been having a good season. You're going to, looks like you could be the home run champion and the RBI champion. So how do you feel about your play this year?
I try to do my thing. You know, it's not like I get crazy about it. I try to keep it calm, keep my head down, keep grinding, keep working. That's my thing. I don't like to think more of it. I just try to do my thing and work hard, and at the end of the season, the numbers are going to be there. So this year, my home runs and RBIs are good. I probably want it to hit for more average too, but it's part of the game.
Hey, man, we'll be expecting a triple crown from you next year.
Yeah, it'd be fun. But, yeah, right now, RBIs and home runs, they're pretty good this year. They're my top ever. So I'm feeling good about it. But I think I can do better on my average.
Well, they always say the most important hit is the next one. So, not the last one. All right. So, now what was the focus in March? Because you guys got off to kind of a bad start, but you guys turned it around. So, what has been the focus since that time?
So, it's the grind. It's the grind of baseball. It happens. It happens. Baseball stops sometimes, and you got your ups and downs. And sometimes there are more downs than ups, and you got to fight, get through it. I think
only sometimes there are more downs than ups.
Probably a lot of times, yeah. But yeah, that's baseball. You know, it's baseball. It's a game of failure, and I mean, 3 out of 10 is great. So
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, 3 out of 10 is great. That's not a good odd. I mean, in other sports, 3 out of 10 is not good.
I know.
But yeah, you just grind and do your thing.
So how different now, how has this team changed from the beginning of the season to now? I know you had some injuries and some other guys have stepped up, some younger players have come in and contributed, but how has the team just overall changed?
It's their attitude is pretty good. I mean, all the young guys are working hard, and when Miyazaki went down, Ito picked it up, and Satsuki weren't playing third. Everybody did their thing, you know. Sano, all the young guys had a great year. And I think those are the guys that keep us fighting through now. And that's the thing, like, we never give up, I think. Not because they were young, they were scared of it. They went through it, they fight, and they had great years, I think.
Now, every team had its share of injuries and troubles, and you guys lost guys like Patton. You said Miyazaki went down. I wasn't sure that he was going to come back. Did you guys think he was coming back?
As soon as he had surgery, he was like, I'm coming back in 4 weeks. So I'm like, let's go. So he went down there, and I was like impressed when he got here in four weeks and a little bit more. And I was like, wow. So the guys want to be here. They want to go to the playoffs and get a chance to win it all.
Right, right. And then Tsutsugo, he's down. I mean, how did you guys feel when he left?
We felt, I mean, it's obviously a big down in our lineup. The guy can hit. We all know that. And but hey, good thing we're going to the playoffs, and he's probably going to be ready for that. So that's we feel good. We feel good about it.
Now, we all know in the playoffs, it's, you know, the team that has some success on offense and does the fewest mistakes on defense. But what do you think that the Bay Stars have to do to get to the Japan Series?
I think we just got to play our thing, like our game, like we've been doing it all year. We got to have fun. I think that's one thing. Not because it's a playoff, we're going to get more pressure on or something like that. We just got to play through it. It's another game. Have fun. And when you have fun, your natural abilities come out. So I'm a big believer of that.
What position are you going to be having the most fun at?
I don't know. Wherever they put me, I'll be there.
All right, now, where do you guys have an advantage? I know I've been talking to some of the reporters. They're talking about the Tigers, and you guys didn't do so well against the Tigers this year. But, I mean, I'm thinking that the Carp are really strong, too. So where's your advantage when you look at the other Central League teams? Because if you win, you'd have to play the Giants as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are good teams. I feel like these Central Division is pretty equal. I mean, Tigers bullpen, it's unbelievable. It's one of the best, if not the best, of this league. But like I said, we gotta play our game, do no mistakes, and play through it. I mean, we got good hitters. We got good hitters, and we got good pitching too. So we just need to do our thing. Not worry about what they have, what they can do. Worry about us, not them.
Now, I know it's not set yet, and I already told you before we started the interview, hail to the king. You are in line to be a two-time Central League homer champion. Tell me about that game last night at Tokyo Dome where, you know, you hit a home run, Sakamoto comes back and hits a home run, and what's going through your mind?
I don't know. I was like, this is another game. Our manager told me, hey, you're going to have two or three at-bats. So I was like prepared to that. And I don't know. I didn't even hit that ball good. I hit it out in front, but I didn't know if it was going to go or not. And well, when it went out, I felt good. I mean, it was like, it was 2-0 the game, and I had another home run, two more RBIs, and then Sakamoto next inning hit a home run, Abe hit another home run, and they were a tie game. But it's been fun this year. I mean, Sakamoto is a great hitter. This year, it's like unbelievable. You can't get him out. I feel like every time he hit the ball, he hit it hard, and it's fun. It's fun to see him play and see him hit, and the way he carries himself. It's great. I feel like he's a true professional athlete.
Yeah, he is, and a pretty good hitter. And I had a discussion with Alex when they were teammates, and I said, you know, I think one day he's going to get to 40 home runs, and he finally did it. I don't know if he was trying to hit the home run last night or not, but yeah, he's gone through a lot of swing change and everything. Did you do anything different coming into this season with your swing to just try to get more contact or try to get more?
Not really. I try to do the same thing. Try to get more on my legs. That's the thing here. Like, at least for me, so many off pitch and so many changes of speed, fastballs, change ups, lots of off pitch. So I try to get more in my legs and trying to see the ball and hit it. Not trying to do too much. I mean, you can see the fields here. I mean, once you hit it good, they're gone. The ball is gone. So don't try to do too much and try to see the ball better.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck in the postseason.
Thank you.
Congratulations on a good regular season. But that's over. Almost.
It's almost over. It's almost over. I'm excited.
All right. Have a good one. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right, well, yeah, I like the attitude that he brings. What did you like, Jim?
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to say, yeah, it's good to hear you because I tried like twice to talk to you, so and about the most we did was say hi twice. It's just because I got, yeah, well, that was a Spencer Patton the day before he had a disagreement with the refrigerator. You know, we said hi, and Spencer Patton was talking to me like, you know, as he does. And there wasn't time for anything else because he's so engaging. And I apologize for that. I've wanted to go out there a lot more. So I was really happy that you did the interview. And I really enjoyed it because Neftali started out being the fifth Isley brother. The one who's from Puerto Rico, of course. And it was really, I mean, well, what stood out? I mean, I guess without copying his language, I think focus on what we do and not worry about what other people do. As a player, and I wouldn't extend that to Alex Ramirez because he's a master about looking at what his opponents in the playoffs do. And finding ways to disturb them, to throw them off their rhythm. But when it comes to the players, I think the two things I would comment are the other one that plays into the Alex Ramirez comment is the got to have fun. You know, what to do in the playoffs. We've got to remember to have fun. And that is really, really... all the things that have happened in this past week with other players and Alex Ramirez, and you mentioned, of course, that Alex Ramirez was a teammate of Hayato Sakamoto when he was with the Giants. And I was thinking also that when Alex Ramirez played with the Giants, his role was one of his roles on the team, in addition to being a big RBI guy, was to go out there before the game, after the team stretched, and after they're sitting there kind of slack-jawed waiting for the game to start at Tokyo Dome or wherever. He'd walk around on the bench, smacking guys on the head, poking them, getting them to laugh, saying funny things. And that's a job that another player took over, and when I heard Neftali Soto talk about that, I thought, wow, that's really interesting, because Alex will, the one thing that we can expect from the Bay Stars, now that they've been in the playoffs this will be the third year in 4 years under Alex Ramirez, is that they will be fairly loose. That's one. And so I like that comment. The other thing that interested me was about his legs. Yeah, more of his legs, you know, not trying to do any more, but in essence, yeah, building up the leg. And I'm not a hitting person. I do understand that people, I'm more of a sitting watching person, you know. And my butt muscles, it doesn't really matter too much what a good solid base I have when guys on TV are swinging at curveballs and such. But I understand the concept, and I'm glad that he brought it up. And I thought that was kind of fun. How about you?
Yeah, I like the same thing. He talked about do your thing and do our thing and relaxation and all that kind of stuff. And the only difference is, yeah, when you're talking about these instances, you are talking about a playoff situation where if you lose, you're going home.
Sure, but you know, you relax and you don't put more pressure on yourself than exists. You know, stay within yourself. I always go back to what Casey McGee said a few years ago when you talked to him about what does it mean to be a veteran in the postseason. He says it means that you've been in important games and you've messed it up, so you know that tomorrow is still another day. that no matter what happens, your teammates support you, your family loves you, and life goes on. So if you miss the fat pitch with the bases loaded and two outs, and it's going to put the game away, and you end up losing, tomorrow is another day. Your teammates will say, "We'll get them next year. You'll have other chances." Life goes on. Yeah, exactly. We're all moving towards the finish line, but it's not going to make the finish line come any sooner.
I mean, I understand being comfortable and being loose and all that stuff, but it's also important to, basically all the teams are going to be finishing up within 4 weeks of each other. Some of the teams are finishing today. We got the last game of the season, a night game on Monday. When we upload this one, that will be the last regular season game, and perhaps the Tigers will put themselves in a position to win that and perhaps go into the CLCS. But yeah, these teams are going home, so you've got to relax, but you also have to try to win these games and move on. Yeah, but I do see the point when it comes down to it. They have to focus on themselves. And I was talking to Michael Westbay on the way to the stadium. I was messaging. We were kind of messaging back and forth as I was heading out that way.
You need to stop that sometimes, I think.
So anyway, yeah. Yeah, the issue with the Bay Stars is it seemed to be, and Michael was saying the same thing. He used the term "we." I still don't get that, but yeah, he said, you know, we don't want to play the Tigers. And I talked to another reporter, a friend of mine out there, and she was saying the same thing, that the Bay Stars don't really want any part of the Tigers. And I think, yeah, you probably had a situation where things didn't go your way in the regular season, but you also have a situation in which everything's different. Like, the rosters were different at that time. You guys were playing different kind of, the team was playing a little bit differently at time. Both teams were playing differently. So those things, yeah, they might play in. If it's a mental block that they want to avoid playing the Tigers, I don't think that's good. But look, for me, I would stay away from the more dangerous team. And to me, the more dangerous team is the Hiroshima Carp. I mean, they've got power, they've got speed, they've got really good pitching, a couple of really good starters, a good enough bullpen. That team seems more dangerous to me. I think when you look at the Tigers, you've got a pretty good idea of what can hurt you and what's not going to hurt you, and where to attack. And that just seems like a better situation to me. But if they feel more comfortable about playing the Carp than the Tigers, so be it, I guess.
You always love it when they do say, they're the guys we want to play because the other guys are tough. These guys are lame. And he doesn't want to come out. I don't want to come out and say they're lame, but we can take them. You know, they have confidence. And what I was thinking about was the, I wanted to make an analogy between what you're just saying about, facing the stronger teams. It's a lot like, it's probably, if there is an effect, okay, you know, we didn't do well against the Tigers this year. We did well against the Dragons and the SK Wyverns or whoever. The effect of that is similar to the batting order in baseball games. It really doesn't matter too much where the guy's batting fourth or fifth. It doesn't matter too much, you know, which guy is batting first or second, but it matters to the players. You know, they get thinking about what it means. You know, they have these, you know, what it means to them, and it matters.
Right, right.
And even though, you know, you can run the numbers and you can do this, and Deanna Rubin posted something really nice the other day, and somebody else, a friend of the show, was chatting with me on Twitter the other day, and we were talking about being a fan and being analytical. And Deanna had been upset about this person's analytical behavior towards the players she loves. And Deanna's one of these people who really loves. She's really sees the play, you know, she follows the players from the time, some of them from the time they're in high school.
Right.
and in college, and she has, you know, she's, when you say these people are human beings, she sees them as, you know, she sees them as the kids who are going to Jingu Stadium before and after the game and who interact with the fans and as individuals, and to them, and for many Japanese fans, I'll just say this is another further magnitude of digression. They see the players as, yeah, you'll hear me fading away as you drift into a coma. The point I'm making is that the Japanese fans see, very often Japanese fans see the players as people to support, as human beings who have lives and who we don't want anything bad to happen to, like your friends, and that their failures are just part of life. Their successes are like their birthdays, something to celebrate. The failures are something to get over and not worry about. And it's very unanalytical, but it's a really, I don't know, it's a refreshing, fun kind of attitude. And it was interesting that she posted that like the day after we were having this discussion of a conversation he had with her. But yes.
Yeah, the players are people. I think a lot of times we as fans, or fans everywhere, we just forget about that. We just look at the numbers.
We look at what they can do. You know, I don't see them as she used the expression, players are not random number generators. But with analysts, we, and I should use the term loosely, we, as many analysts would say about me, we tend to look at players as generators of data points, not necessarily random number generators, because we understand they come from skills and context. But we do look, you know, we're looking, trying to find the big picture, and in that big picture, players are data points. And she's the opposite. And you know, I love the fact that baseball has all these different viewpoints. I find that as refreshing, or as probably more refreshing and more empowering as a human being than I do, you know, the data science approach. But I like that both can coexist. Anyway, that's okay. Digression ended. Come back. Okay, snap out. Okay, snap your fingers, and the listeners will break out of their hypnosis.
Yeah, right. I wish I could snap my fingers and make you do stuff, but that's not really the way it works.
Hashtag high heat.
So they'll be starting the first stage, they call it. I call it first round. This weekend at home, Saturday, Sunday, and if needed, a third game on Monday. First team to win two games wins the series. No one game advantage or any of that stuff until the second round. So
the last comment about this is that Alex Ramirez, through his managing in the postseason, has changed the way Japanese managers deal with variability and flexibility. I believe they've all become a little more flexible, thinking about what else can I do that I haven't been doing? You know, what's permissible? Because it used to be, you know, starters did this, relievers did that, and anybody who said they don't is a communist. You know, position players have these roles, and we're here, Japanese baseball is this thing sort of like we're here to obey the rules. You know, we're here to be the Borg, we're here to conform. And Alex Ramirez, you know, in the 2017 postseason, changed that to some degree by bringing in his starters as relievers. I mean, managers have done that before in the postseason, but it was refreshing, and did it in different ways, and he did it. He took people by surprise. We've seen it before. We've seen starters become relievers in the middle of the series. 2008 between the Giants and Lions is famous. But he's made things, for some reason, the fact that he took this underdog team in 2017 to, you know, within a game of winning the Japan series. Well, I should say within two games. Within a game and one inning of winning the Japan series. Just blew people away. And since then, managers have been more willing, like, wait, this is just a game. We can try something new. This is not religion. And I think he's impacted Japanese baseball for the better. And the other thing I think, and I guess the real point, and I'll get to a real point, so thank you for staying with me, is that Alex Ramirez has got basically 5 days to look at the Carp and the Tigers and decide how he wants to attack them with the resources he has. And then thinking, okay, once I get past them, then I got to play the Giants in the back of my mind. But those other two teams really haven't had the leeway. They haven't had the luxury of looking past, you know, playing the Dragons or playing the Carp. The Carp now have a luxury because they can focus on DNA or focus on fall minicamp.
All right, let's talk about the Lions. On Tuesday, the Lions pounded Kota Futaki and Lotte 12-4. And early on, Rakuten, the Eagles fell behind by a run to the SoftBank Hawks at home, but they got a home run by Zealous Wheeler with a man on to take the lead and then tacked on two more runs and then held on in the ninth inning when Yuki Matsui loaded the bases with one out. But they held on for a 4-2 victory over SoftBank, and then that was it. That set the Pacific League standings. The Lions won their back-to-back titles.
Indeed. That was it. That inning, that ninth inning set the Pacific League playoffs.
The SoftBank Hawks ended up in second, and the Rakuten Eagles sneak into the playoffs in third place. Rakuten's going to go travel to Fukuoka this weekend. The winner comes to Tokorozawa to face the Hungry Lions. It's amazing, and you know, I have the memories or the indelible images of Hatsuhiko Tsuji, the manager of the Lions, crying or in tears basically after his team failed to defeat the Hawks and go to the Japan Series. And this Lions team is just amazing.
How come it's hard for me to imagine Hatsuhiko Tsuji in tears unless he's being happy? He's got that stone-faced, stoic look. Tears, come on.
Well, yeah, I think he's got that look, but sometimes he's got it's this, the stoical look is sometimes tainted by a little bit of disgust when one of his pitchers gives up a home run or a bases loaded walk, and then it has a kind of a happy tint when one of his guys hits a home run. Now, this team is amazing. It's really hard to figure out. I said it earlier on in the season, but you know, with the pitching and the defense and all these things, you got four of the five run leaders in the PL on this team. Takuya Nakamura and Hotaka Yamakawa are the RBI and home run leaders, respectively. You've got five players with at least 20 home runs. You got three guys with at least 100 RBIs. They didn't move into first place in the standings in the PL until September 11th, game 130. They were down as many as 8.5 games at some point or at one point. And, you know, I admit I sort of left them for dead at the All-Star break when I think they were around fourth place. The team ERA is bad. The defense is not great. But you look at the home runs and the number of steals, and all the other teams in MPB are envious. And they put a lot of pressure on pitchers, catchers, fielders, managers, coaches, team analytic nerds, cheerleaders, diehard fans, fair weather friends. You get the picture, right?
Well, they had more out. They had more plate appearances to work with because the guys don't make outs as often.
You look at this, and it's just, this is an impossible model for other teams to follow. This is not going to be a model that other teams follow, right?
I don't think it will, because it's a very, and I don't want to say, because they lack balance. It's a very expensive model to try to build. It's essentially the Chicago Cubs model, for those of you who follow the major leagues. It makes sense in one respect, because I think the Lions are one of the least analytically oriented teams in NPB. But if you had to build a team with a certain amount of resources and every time you have a choice between do we spend on a pitcher or do we spend on a hitter, a position player, generally you're going to pick a position player because they have more they will have more consistency and more long-term return. Position players basically do, you know what to expect from them. If they play, if they're fast or if they hit the ball hard or they have these certain, they're going to keep doing them. Pitchers, because the nature of the game is, okay, everything's on you. You know, develop another pitch, pitch when you're hurt, whatever. But the injuries are frequent, an extremely physically abusing position, and that players are inconsistent. And so if the Lions when I say expensive to build, I don't mean in terms of cost, but they're very hard to get that many hitters who are really, really, really good without dipping seriously into free agency, without signing the absolute best foreign players. It's a very difficult balance because you have to have more. You have to have more when you've got limited pitching and defense. You don't just need a little bit more hitting. You need a lot more hitting when your team's out of balance like that. So in that sense, it's uneconomical and hard to do. But from a buyer's perspective and marginal, how much marginal gain you have from each player, you always go for it. You would tend to go for a position player, but there are limits. You can only have so many position players on the team, and you do have to have guys who play positions. I mean, they have to actually play defense. And having said that, the Lions, the secret to their success was that not all their starting pitchers were really bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, Zach Neale was phenomenal, has been phenomenal.
They had enough at the end, and they got good pitching at the end. And that essentially, when their pitchers pitched up to their abilities, when three or four of their starting pitchers pitched up to their abilities over the last 6 weeks of the season, that's basically when they clinched the pennant. And
yeah, well, I mean, Zach Neale was phenomenal, has been phenomenal.
And the other reason this model isn't this, I think, of course, the biggest reason that this model worked for a second year is that the SoftBank Hawks were eaten up by injuries.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to give credit to the Lions for winning the games they won. And they put themselves in position to be there if the SoftBank Hawks stumbled, which they did.
Well, no, you give them credit for what they did, but they still lost. They still played, and I'm not saying the league was weaker, but I'm telling you, their top competition, the Lions won 9 fewer games than they did last year, which isn't a surprise. Yeah, I mean, they lost some big players. They're not as good a team as they were last year, I don't think. I don't think the balance is any better. It's still lousy. But the Hawks, just dealing with so many injuries and having to play essentially half their farm team for half the year, that allowed the Lions to win the game, win the league by a game. That without that, they're finishing in second place.
All right. Well, I'm still giving them credit. I'm giving them credit for what they did.
Yeah. Fair enough. And I think the other thing that's the other strength of the Lions is manager Tsuji. And you alluded to this a week or two ago, that a guy who was essentially brought in because I believe the Lions set a franchise, I don't think it was a franchise record, but I think they set a record for since they moved to Cebu in 1979. Since Cebu bought them in 1979, too, they set a franchise record for either number of errors in a season or the number of unearned runs in a season. There was a fielding-related stat, and they brought in Tsuji essentially to fix the defense, which he did the first year he took over. And now here's the manager who's the defense-first manager who's got a team – which plays competent defense. Over competent at best, competent team defense. They have, you know, of course, a great. They have a great, great shortstop, and then basically competent. Okay, and the point I'm making is that he is okay with that. You would see many Japanese old guys like tearing out their hair and going, "I can't work." With people like this, I can't work under these conditions.
This is not my contract.
Exactly. This is not my job description to have a team that basically hits and doesn't pitch. And instead, he's going, you know what? I don't worry about it. This is what I got. I don't lose sleep over it. And I love that. I think that's a huge thing. He doesn't put extra pressure on, as much as they put pressure on him, he doesn't put extra pressure on the players to be something they're not. That's a little of the Alex Ramirez approach there.
Right. So, you know, we've got the Hawks, the Eagles going to Fukuoka, as I said earlier, to play the Hawks. And I don't know, this looks like a really close series to me. But the Hawks have shown a little bit, they've shown chinks in the armor here.
You just see cracks, John.
Hey, man, crack kills.
Hashtag high heat.
I see a Hawks team that obviously is still good, but they just, I don't know, something's missing. It just hasn't been sharp. It hasn't been sharp for a while now. It's still lethal. You've got guys who can bang the ball, come up with clutch hits, make clutch plays in the field, do the things it takes to win a series. But the guys just really haven't been sharp. They haven't looked good, particularly down the stretch when I thought, okay, well, now the Hawks have righted the ship and they're gonna finish this thing off. And then they just kind of stumbled again heading toward the end, just playing basically 500 ball. They just really haven't looked great. And I don't know if they go into a series, you know, I can't pick them. I don't know who to pick. I don't know. I guess I would pick the Eagles if I were rooting, but I'd bet on the Hawks. I don't know what to do.
Well, that was about as ambiguous as I try to be. So congratulations for that. I like the Eagles pitching going into that because, again, reliability. I mean, it doesn't bother me that guys like, you know, Shota Imanaga had a couple of bad starts because you know what they can do. You know that they'll be able to do some, you know, they're the best bets. And the Eagles have, you know, Takayuki Kishi, they've got Norimoto, who's pitched well in a couple of his last games. Kishi pitched well in some of his last games. Yeah, they both had really lousy seasons. Manabu Mima's been between ordinary and spectacular this year. I like them to, in a pinch, to bet the Hawks. Of course, you know, the three games a crapshoot. The other thing is that with the Hawks, Yuki Inagita really isn't Yuki Inagita this year. He's not the guy who started the season, and I don't see him as a big factor. The other guys, yes, Alfredo Despaigne is just amazing. The other guys are amazing. I like a lot of their pitchers, but I wouldn't put them past it. I'll pick the Eagles. Why not? I mean, I like the Hawks. I love the Hawks. They certainly have more talent up their sleeves. But whether it's going to be there or not at the right time. And again, without Yuki and Nagita, they don't feel like the Hawks. And, I mean, he's going to be there, but...
Yeah, I guess you're right. All right. I'll pick the Eagles, too. I mean... Yeah, I really like the Eagles. It would be nice to see some new blood up there and go on maybe either to go to the Japan Series or, you know, another time since 2013. But I don't know. The Lions look pretty strong anyway. I don't know that whatever team is going to get through here is going to be anything more than second-round fodder. But, yeah, I guess I can go with the Eagles here. You know, what have I got to lose? All right, well, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about a big retirement that occurred this week, and that was Shinnosuke Abe of the Yomiuri Giants, and on Monday it was learned that he had informed the team and his teammates that he planned to retire at season's end. And then I think on Tuesday, via Twitter, the Giants sent out a video that actually showed him making the announcement to his teammates, and that was neat to see. I really appreciated that. So around the end of August, I was going to start to compile a list of guys I thought might be, could be, should be retiring.
Oh, I don't go into the shoulda, wouldas, just the didas.
Right, right. Yeah, actually, in terms of the list, we've been so busy, I didn't even tell you about it because, I was thinking this guy maybe should have, this guy maybe could. There's one thing that can be said, and you talked about it on last week's show. You said a player who spends a lot of time on the bench pinch hitting, he's losing about 10% of his offense. It's being diminished in that kind of a role. And you look at Abe, and he's hitting .297, and that was as of Friday. So your statements last week about that means to me that he could hit, he could still hit and probably go somewhere and be a DH.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Which brings me to his retirement game, because I sort of foreshadowed that, or his retirement game at Tokyo Dome, because, well, we had another retirement, which was spectacular last weekend, which we'll talk about in a moment, but there was a spectacular ending to it, and I thought that's really, it was authentic. It was in the game, and it was for the game. It was something that happened in the game, and it was a big play, and the guy ended the game with a big play, and it was just as good as you can get, and because it was unusual. Okay, this is not Abe. We're talking about a Pacific League guy. Okay, but having said that, Abe, and the reason I brought that up is because when it happened, I went, this was so not fake. And the guy I'm referring to, but I'm saying the actual play itself was not fake. And I brought this up because the Yomiuri Giants have a tendency to push the boundaries of belief and manufacture things to make them look like they're real when they're just PR. And probably the most famous one of that was Tatsunori Hara's last at bat. The Giants had a huge ceremony for Tatsunori Hara planned, a huge production. It was like opening day. They probably had a dozen people working on Tatsunori Hara's retirement ceremony and retirement game. And the Carp pitcher, and I don't remember, to be honest, whether it was Yutaka Ono or Kawaguchi, which left-hander it was, basically threw Hara an 85-mile-an-hour straight batting practice fastball a little up in the zone, and he smacked it for a home run in his final at-bat. And I was thinking that what happened when we saw this real ending to a game, I thought, that's something. Hara's was just PR baloney. They threw him a pitch that he could hit for home run. Okay, now Abe hit a home run in his last game, and it was...
I just think you should tell people, I know what you're talking about because I know the play and you tweeted about it, but you should tell people exactly who you're talking about.
Oh, Fukuura. Okay, it was Kazuya Fukuura for the Lotte Marines, who basically he's been a DH for the last couple of years. He's always had back issues for a decade. And he hasn't played all season, and they put him at first base. He started the game at DH, and he didn't have any hits. But in the last inning of his last game, the ninth inning of his last game, they put him at first base, which was, I guess, that was the PR move. Okay, they put him at first base, and he's going to end his career at first base. But he not only ended his career at first base, but he dove to catch a low-line drive to end the game. It was just spectacular. Okay. So that was the real thing. That was the anti-Hara retirement game stuff. And I don't mean to take anything away from Tatsunori Hara, but that's just the Giants being the Giants. Anyway, so Shinosuke Abe, not surprisingly, hit a home run in his last game. And he blasted it. It wasn't quite a cookie. It was a straight fastball. This guy was aiming it. But it was about a 90 mile an hour fastball. But you know what? My thought was, Abe can still play. He's not one of these guys who needs to retire. And this is where I'm going on to what you said. This guy can still play. He can still hit. You throw him that 90 mile an hour, just a little bit, you know, middle in. Oh, man. And he's going to do what he does, which is put it 20 rows back in right field. And so I love that. I love that, you know, he gave him something he could hit. And he showed why he doesn't need to retire except on his terms. So I loved that. And then they didn't throw him a cookie in his final at bat. Okay, more credit to the Bay Stars and the Giants.
Anyway, the thing that went around as soon as, you know, we were working on a story at the paper, and it was a translation, and the thing that people brought up, including a longtime Giants fan there in the office, said, "Well, he's obviously going to be manager at some point, and you don't see him managing in any other uniform other than the Giants uniform." So I started to say, "Yeah, well, I think they have time since they have Hata there. I think they have time to get him some, you know, have him hone his chops, probably as a coach first." And then he could even be the farm manager for some time, where they could get him some experience. But he's the perfect kind of a manager. And he said at his press conference, he said, "Look, I'm going to be involved in baseball to the day I die." So I think we all know what that means. The writing is all over the Tokyo Dome walls.
I could see him managing the Giants farm team next year, or being a coach with the first team. But you know what? He could manage. And there was something, I wrote about this on my website, but there was a moment about 2 weeks ago, Abe was playing first base and the Giants were trying to lock down the pennant. And they were in a crucial situation. I think it was the bases loaded and Neftali Soto was coming up to bat with two outs against the Bay Stars 10 days ago or so. And Kazutomo Miyamoto, who ironically retired the same game as Hara, he's the pitching coach, came out to the mound, and you could see Miyamoto and you could see the pitcher and you could see Abe at the mound meeting. And the reason Miyamoto came out to the mound was so that Abe could tell the pitcher what to do, because basically the pitcher and the pitching coach are nodding their head and the first baseman's telling them what we're doing. Now that's Abe. He's got a presence. Scott Matheson and Casey McGee both called him a baseball genius, and I think that's his secret. He's not the greatest. He's not the greatest physical specimen in the world. He's kind of a average height, a little bit chubby guy, but he's just got a mind like a Swiss watch. He just knows what's coming. He knows what to do. He's always prepared. He's always ready. Perfect managing material.
Yep.
He's just a smart, easygoing guy. And of course, the best scene, there were a number of scenes. And I want to also say about the, it wasn't planned. Oddly enough, so he played his last game at Jingu Stadium. And the thing I liked about that is, unlike Tokyo Dome, it wasn't scripted. So the Giants, the Giants went out as a team. They kind of lined up and they faced their fans in left field. And because they're the Giants and it's a Central League and they're not as hip as the Pacific League teams are, they didn't honor the home fans as the Pacific League teams have been doing in their final games this year, which I think is really cool. But Abe did. The Giants players were all then retreating to, you know, they'd gone out and lined up behind the infield to face their fans in left field, and then they were walking off to the visitors' clubhouse, and Abe did a right turn, and he walked over and bowed to the Swallows fans, many of whom who had Abe signs. And for the Swallows fans, I mean, most Swallows fans really, really, really dislike the Giants. But having said that, having said that, that was really, really good.
So, yeah, only he and Katsuya Nomura are the only catchers with a career 2,000 hits and 400-plus home runs. So Abe also has more than 1,200 RBIs. So just an incredible career that's coming to an end. And I saw a bunch of people crying on Pro Yaku News. We had one of the announcers, she was crying. One of the other analysts, he was crying. They were all just emotional about this whole thing. I'm not. And one other thing that was really cool was they asked Abe in his press conference when he announced his retirement, who would you like to catch one more time, one last time? And he mulled around, I don't know, 5 minutes it seemed, and then he finally said Scott Matheson, who got the start at Tokyo Dome in the Tokyo Dome finale, and Abe got to catch him that first inning that Scott threw, the one inning. So that was really cool. So
yeah, brilliant stuff.
Very, very nice wrap up in that situation. And obviously the Giants want to put a bow on that with a Japan Series title, but we'll have to see how that goes. Let's make a seamless transition and talk about another person who's up to be a future manager, and then another manager who surprisingly stepped away. So we had the question last week on the show about Hideki Kuriyama at Nippon Ham and whether he was going to be fired or what was going to happen with him. And I think you called that one.
They might ask him to stay and he might say, no, I've had enough.
Okay, well, either way, he ends up walking away, and that kind of comes as a surprise. But I don't know. I guess it's time. He probably just needs what I called it is a mental break. I think he just needs to take some time away from the game. And he'll probably do the Tatsunori Hara where he comes back after X number of years where he just had enough time outside and away from the game and all the pressures. But in the meantime, we've got Shingo Takatsu, who's hasn't been officially named, but we talked about the fact that Junji Ogawa was going to step away from the Yakult Swallows, and no surprise there. But Shingo Takatsu, now what was funny was I reached out to all the Swallows fans I know, and I tried to get a read or a feel for what the fan base is thinking, and it was amazing because all the unsolicited opinions we get on Twitter, and what I got back was kind of wet noodly. I mean, we get these free comments on Twitter of guys who are ready to, hack off body parts because of the decisions that are made in games or the way the team is playing. And then now it was just cordial acceptance of, possibly Shingo Takatsu taking over. So there wasn't a lot of emotion involved. I don't know if it's his fault or just that he hasn't been officially named, or I really don't know what's going on.
Holders and who have many records for worsts in the Central League. I have to go back to what I said last week about Shinya Miyamoto, who was brought in ostensibly. I think the belief was that he came in with Ogawa in the hopes that maybe he would like being in the Jingu dugout so much that he'd stay on as manager. But having watched 2 years of that, I think he said, like, not on your Nelly. Like, I got a wife and kids who I enjoy being with much more than this train wreck.
Hashtag high heat.
He doesn't need to manage, and therefore he's not going to. And I have to think that if the Swallows were more a more positive organization with more of a look towards the future, that he might take it on because he's a smart guy. That doesn't mean to say that I think Takatsu is not a smart guy. The pitchers he's worked with have all given him a lot of credit for how adept he is and how easy, an important thing for a Swallows manager is being easy to get along with for some reason. Which makes Shigeru Takata's sort of hiring kind of interesting, but anyway, he is easy to get along with, and he'll again change. I expect the Swallows will do better in his first year, basically, because that's whatever the Swallows do. Every time they change managers, they always do better. I think it's an organizational issue. I like him personally. I don't think he's going to be able to change the organization above him, which gets to me to the point, and I'll go back just thinking about Kuriyama in the Nippon Ham Fighters, because when he told, when a team sources revealed that he'd told the team he doesn't want to come back, the fighters said, "We don't believe it's his fault. It was an organizational player development issue. We didn't give him guys he could win with, really. I mean, we had injuries and we weren't able to replace them. And these are things that are beyond his scope. We don't ask the manager to do that." But I'll go, I think also he had also seen enough on the field that he didn't really want to put himself through that for another year. So I think with the Swallows, there's organizational issues that are going to prevent them from being consistently competitive.
Takatsu, I guess he's got some experience having taken charge on the farm team, so I like the continuity, and he's a former star there, and he pitched in the big leagues, and it could be a nice fit. They just have to improve the roster and remake what they've got there. I don't know where they go in terms of roster rebuilding, but I would try to make some changes, get younger, get some more speed, get some of the guys I talked about. I did see a story that Coco Ballantyne, they're interested in bringing him back next year as well. You know, they've got some players they can build around, so I would like to see them do a little bit better, just improve the roster and then go from there, and then maybe the manager can make some impact on what they're doing. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, our question this week comes from Coaster Freak, and it was via Twitter, and he says, Tadahito Iguchi's Marines have had a brutal second half in both of his seasons to come up short of the top three. What happens to him? Hashtag high heat.
Well, brutal second half is, I think, an illusion. They had a better record. I think they were better in the second half than they were in the first half. So, but having, and I think we were talking about this before the show, and we both sort of agreed that they showed some lights that may be the lights at the end of the tunnel. In my case, I think with a couple of the pitchers, and I think Ayumu Ishikawa pitching sort of like, you know, making us think, you know, there was another guy like 4 years ago named Ayumu Ishikawa is really good. And is this guy the same guy kind of thing? Okay. Random number generator kind of viewpoint, I would say managers generally don't improve in the third year. I see the Marines as being a borderline third place team, which means they could play really well and the ball could bounce wrong for them and they could be in fifth place. And if that happens, that Iguchi will not be around for a fourth year. On the other hand, they could finish second. Unlikely, but possible they could finish second, in which case he will be. But I don't see him actually improving this team, making this team a pennant contender, and it's not necessarily because he doesn't have the managing makeup, but just the Marines aren't a team that's going to go out and give him, you know, get him the players or develop the players that is going to make that difference. They've got too many slap hitters. It's an organization that basically has developed a bunch of slap hitters and a bunch of pinch runners and a bunch of relievers. And yeah, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, and I just remember, I think back to spring training, and you had Iguchi had Kenny Vargas, who, along with Sushi Boy Brandon Laird, was supposed to make a difference and be a difference maker, and he just wasn't. And you know, they hit on Brandon Laird, that was really good, improved the power, but they still have guys like old Chubbs, Aja Seiya Inoue. I'm going to call him Chubbs, or I've been calling him Chubbs, and he matched last year's career high with 24 home runs and fewer plate appearances, but you know, the results and the didn't really come in the win-loss column for this team, and it's something to evaluate, but it's really not a fireable offense in my opinion. But of course, you know, I had Kuriyama staying, and he bailed. And I don't even know what's going on with Yosuke Hiraishi of the Rakuten Eagles, if they're going to have him stay or have him go. So, you know, I think he did an okay job, and I don't know about the brutal second halves. I think, you know, they fought through a lot of shortcomings with the pitching, particularly the starters, something that Zach Ikuma pointed out in the PL prediction show that we did back in February/March. I guess it was March. So I think, you know, what he was working with, I think he did an adequate job. And I'm with you. Let's see what happens next year.
Well, the one guy who I think is going to make an impact next year is who didn't make an impact because he wasn't there long enough was Leonis Martin. This is a guy, it's not kind of the player he was in MLB, but he only had, 170, 180 plate appearances. I don't know the actual number, but his number of at-bats per home run was the lowest of anybody in NPB who had, more than 30 at-bats. That's not nothing. So this is a guy who could easily hit 250 next year and hit 30. And I don't want to extrapolate from that because there will be some regression, but he could be a guy who plays good defense in right field and throws out a bunch of guys and makes a bunch of errors, but hits 250 with a kind of a, you know, with a Brandon Laird season, you know, an on-base percentage around 320 and 30 home runs. So that's a huge step up for the Marines to have a guy in the outfield who produces like that.
Yeah, that was a big pickup for them. So yeah, we'll see what they can do with a good offensive base and then maybe get some pitching. Because I think some of the guys that we saw this year make a jump, you know, the guys who were either rookies or first or second year guys.
Oh yeah.
Who didn't have much experience on the top team, and they come back and maybe make a jump in that next season, and we see better results from them on the mound. But anyway, we've got to go. Thank you very much for the questions. We got some other questions. We will get to them next week. If you have a question, send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on the Facebook page. Shoot over a high heat question via Twitter @JBWPodcast. We will talk to you next week when we're climaxing.
Ooh, get it off of me. See you in the climax series, baby.